joining me, Jamie Page Deaton, who is executive editor of the U.S. News and World Report Best Cars team, and John Paul, AAA's Northeast Senior Manager for Public Affairs and Traffic Safety. He's a master mechanic and is known as AAA's car doctor. Hi to both of you.
Hey, how are you?
Hi.
I'm great, and I'm so happy to hear your voices. As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Are you driving your car a lot less during this crisis? Are you concerned about negative impacts on your vehicle? Or are you thinking about, maybe this is a good time to get a good deal on a new or used car? You share your comments or questions by email, a brief email, please, talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at MainCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. John and Jamie, usually I start my programs with you because you're members of the automotive press. You've always been able to, you've been driving all the newest models of all sorts of car manufacturers. And I'm wondering, has that all been suspended, Jamie? Are you continuing to drive new cars, or are you just sort of waiting to see what's on the horizon?
Well, no, for me, U.S. News, we've stopped our test driving program for a couple of reasons. One is we're all in states with stay-at-home orders, and we don't want to be in violation of that. And we really don't think that, you know, test driving cars is an essential service. Then the other thing is, you know, there is some concern about potentially, you know, one of us spreading the virus to one of the drivers who pick up the cars and drops it off. And I know that the fleet companies have really taken on a lot in, you know, cleaning the cars up. But at the same time, you can also never be sure. So it's been close to 8 weeks since I've been in a new car. And I will say I'm kind of itching to get back to it. But, you know, we want to be safe. We want to make sure we're doing everything right.
And John Paul, same for you?
Not quite as stringent, I guess. I have driven a car here and there. And it has been one of those, Jamie's absolutely right. It is something that the delivery companies sanitize the cars. They ask you to kind of do the same thing when you either deliver them back to them or they come to pick them up, and, you know, kind of wipe them down and go over them all and all of that. I typically, if the car gets delivered to me, I kind of let it sit for a day just in case. But no, the cars certainly are as clean as they've ever been, I suppose. So I have driven a few cars, and one of the ones that I've driven lately that I really liked was the Genesis G70. The G70 by Genesis is actually Hyundai's kind of premium car line. And it is just a delightful car to drive. It handles well. It rides well. It has a 3.3-liter turbocharged engine, and it's all-wheel drive. So although where I live, we haven't had a lot of winter, it is great in the winter, but it's like any all-wheel drive car. All-wheel drive improves the overall handling all the time. So just a good car, and the idea that it's, you know, we used to think of Hyundai as sort of a bargain price car, and yeah, you got a car for kind of what you paid for it, and it wasn't necessarily a great car. This Genesis is a really, really nice car.
John, am I really behind the times if I had never heard of Genesis?
Hyundai came out a couple years ago with sort of a premium level of cars. It actually started with a car called the Equus, which was sort of a very upscale premium car. And then I think they finally decided that, you know what, maybe our name is hurting our car sales when people think of premium cars. And they said, well, let's call it a Genesis, similar to Acura to Honda, Infiniti to Nissan, and Lexus to Toyota.
Jamie, news out just today that yesterday three automakers reopened, GM, Ford, and Fiat Chrysler. Tell us what they're producing, how much they're producing, who they're trying to sell these vehicles to, and I'm going to cap it off with, is there a market for them?
Yes, absolutely. There's a market for them. I mean, the market has certainly contracted quite a bit with all the economic uncertainty. But automakers, they really need to get back in business. Although I know a few of them did have plenty of cash on hand. I think GM had enough cash on hand to survive to the end of the year, even if they didn't sell one car. But obviously, they'd rather sell cars than not. And so, you know, they've restarted factories. There's still some major issues going on. You know, these types of factories and, you know, this type of manufacturing, it's not something you can just stop and start very easily. And there are obvious safety concerns for the workers at the plants, and that, you know, addressing those concerns and keeping their workers safe is going to impact how quickly that they're able to return to full manufacturing scale. The other issue that these factories are facing for automakers is the supply chain has been significantly disrupted. Manufacturing in Mexico is still not totally up to, you know, where it was in a lot of cases. And so there's going to be, you know, it's not going to be full manufacturing. It's better than no manufacturing, at least for the automakers. And in terms of buyers coming in for this, you know, we're seeing, at least on U.S. News, you know, and looking at auto sales as a whole, they're down. But they are not at the floor that they were at, you know, sort of at the end of March. They rebounded quite a bit through April. And we see a lot of people coming to the market looking for deals because automakers really have started putting up a lot of, you know, a lot of cash on the hood, a lot of 0% financing offers. I think the highest number of 0% financing offers that has ever been recorded were offered in April. And so we're really seeing an issue where, you know, they want to get a lot of they want to get more models to dealers so the dealers can open up and have plenty of inventory to sell when demand comes back.
Yeah, I read, I heard on an NPR story that even though auto sales tanked in March, they've actually been climbing ever since. Fascinating. And John, what about the used car market? I understand that that is entirely different than it was just a year ago.
Yeah, it really is. From even just anecdotally talking to people that are shopping for new cars, all of a sudden they're finding out their used cars aren't worth what they think they should be. They go to all the popular websites and look up the value of their car, and they're finding out the dealers aren't giving them what they think their car should be worth. And one of the reasons is there's really a glut of used cars. And you think about who's buying a car right now. And you look at people that are probably buying new cars are taking advantage of the 0% financing. They're taking advantage of some of these very long loans, but the people that are buying, and also you think about the, and Jamie knows this number better than me, but I think the average transaction price of a new car now is somewhere around $36,000 or $37,000 for a new car. But when you look at the average transaction price of car sales, it's probably closer to $15,000 or $16,000. And the people that are buying the $10,000, $11,000, $12,000, $15,000, $16,000 car, those are people that I think are a little more tentative about whether they should go out and spend the money, which is all of a sudden the used car market has this glut of cars. So when you go to trade your car in, you're not going to get what you think you should get for it. And the values just really aren't there right now.
So, Jamie, basically, if you're looking for a used car, looking for a deal, this is a great time. But if you're looking to trade in your used car or sell your used car, this is not a good time for you.
Exactly. I mean, this is a great opportunity if you're, you know, buying your first car. But for the rest of us, usually when we're buying a car, it means we have a car to dispose. And for a lot of people, you know, disposing of that car, you know, doing a trade-in is where a lot of their down payment comes from. And then, you know, if you also are in a position, which unfortunately a lot of people are going to be in, where you want to trade in your car and you might owe more on it than it's worth, well, your negative equity just increased. And so it's going to be even harder and harder to get out of a loan on a car if you're going to try and trade it in. And a lot of this will work itself out. Automakers and lenders have moved. Some of them are extending leases by another couple of months to try and keep those cars from leaving their leases and going into the used car market. But, you know, this is really just about dealers really needing to get the used car auctions back up and running. Those auctions were shut down in a lot of states. That's where a lot of dealers go to get rid of their excess used car inventory. Once those open up and things start moving again here in a couple of months, we might see prices, you know, go back up. But in the meantime, it's great news if you're a buyer, not so good news if you're a seller.
I want to talk about some of the trends that we're seeing. John, I know that gas prices are way down right now. I also have read, though, that ride-sharing services, the Ubers and Lyfts of this world, are just seeing almost no customers. Do you see this being temporary or something that's going to last?
Well, the gas price thing, we're already started to see a little bit of a climb back up on that now. Kind of across the country, the average went up about 3 cents this week. And we are starting to see those prices come up. And one of the reasons are that in China now, they're starting to look at gasoline consumption at pre-corona numbers. So when you look at the worldwide players of gasoline, the other part is that it wasn't that many weeks ago that the price of crude oil selling on the West Texas oil, the WTI, the number you see quoted all the time, was actually into negative numbers. So it actually was worth less than zero. And today it's worth, you know, more like $30 a barrel. And what happened is the people who produce the crude oil, people and who refine gasoline, have figured out the supply and demand cycle a little bit better. So they've brought the supply down. The demand is getting a little bit stronger every day. And across the world, it's getting a little bit stronger, especially when you look at big players like China. So the low gas prices we saw, and I know I've heard from some people across the country that they saw prices at $1.25 a gallon. I didn't see anything near that close. But certainly those prices, I think, will be a memory in just a few months. And, you know, that's kind of one of the things as far as Uber, Lyft, and the other ride-hailing services, I think there is a concern right now. And kind of Jamie pointed out, too, people are going out to try to do essential things, things they need to do, as far as going out and taking an Uber ride to a restaurant or something. The idea of getting into a car that may not be completely sanitized may be a concern for people, and that may be one of the reasons we're seeing a lot of those drivers, you know, their business slow down. I will say, though, again, just my local feeling, a couple of weeks ago I went to a barbecue place to get some takeout food, and I was pretty much overwhelmed with the amount of rideshare drivers there that were also doing food deliveries, and there must have been 50 of them there. So I think maybe they're not putting passengers in their car, but they're putting barbecue in their cars.
And Jamie, thinking about trends too, I read a survey from the United Kingdom that said 22% of people said they believe they will be driving less after the pandemic is over. Do you think that would be true if we did a similar survey in the United States? And you believe that people are telling the truth and will indeed be driving less after the pandemic?
No, I don't believe it at all. I think people are going to come out of their homes.
There's a reason I asked you.
Yeah, itching for a road trip. I mean, you know, U.S. News, we have a travel website. Traffic on the travel website is up 27% year over year for searches around things like beaches and local small towns near me. People are itching for a trip. Now, I do think there might be a dip in driving as companies realize that for a lot of workers, they do not need to be in the office. And so we might see more of a shift towards remote work. And so we will lose a lot of that kind of daily commuting driving. But what that might be replaced with, if you think about it, you know, if you're a person who lives in a high cost of living area and you'd prefer to live someplace less expensive, and now your company is open to remote work, I don't know why you would continue to live, you know, for example, like in the suburbs of Boston, when you could move farther out in Maine. Now, maybe if you live in Boston, you don't need a car, but in Maine, you do. And so that's something else that could be driving both, you know, driving habits and car sales. You might not have a daily commute, but you might have more car buyers as people move out of high cost of living, densely populated areas, you know, both to save a little money and also because, you know, right now being in a city, you know, during a pandemic doesn't seem like a great place to be. But I think you can start to see, you know, some trends there. But in terms of just kind of, you know, regular driving, going to the store, you know, taking trips, things like that, outside of commuting, I think people, there's going to be a big, you know, a big jump in that type of activity as people really celebrate, you know, the end of the lockdown and quarantine. And then, you know, it'll settle back down to more normal levels.
Oh, my goodness. John? Cindy Hahn, our producer, looked up the price of the Honda Genesis, $72,000.
The Hyundai Genesis can range up to even a little bit more than the G90, which is their top-of-the-line model, can get pretty pricey. But on the other hand, the G90 is an absolutely wonderful car, competitive, in my opinion, with anything that, you know, some of the premium automakers like Mercedes can offer right now, and with loaded with the latest technology at the same time.
Well, no wonder you liked it. I want to ask you a practical question as the car doctor. A lot of people have cars that are sitting in the garage or sitting in their parking space right now. How often do we need to get out and drive our car so that it, you know, isn't in bad shape after this?
Just like us, we need to get out and do some exercise, and it's the same thing for your car. Really, once a week or so, you should get out and start your car and take it for a good 20 or 30 minute drive. That's going to ensure that all the vital fluids get moving around. So inside the engine, inside the transmission, all the various places that all the fluids need to get to, and the engine gets warmed up. And what happens is all of those fluids tend to attract moisture. And by getting them up to temperature, it tends to almost boil that contamination out of the engine and gets it cleaner. One of the things you don't want to do, and one of the things that people sometimes mistakenly do, is they get out and they'll, I'll start my car and let it run for 5 minutes every day. What you're doing there is you're actually contaminating the engine because it doesn't really get hot, and you haven't fully recharged the battery. Where typically a battery in a car, if you let it sit for 2 or 3 weeks, it's going to start the car again. But just starting it up and letting it run for a few minutes, you're actually taking more electricity out of the battery than you're putting it back in. So going out once a week or so, driving the car, exercising the car, that prevents flat spots in the tires and just does the car a lot of good. And let's face it, probably does us a lot of good to get out and, you know, drive around a little bit. To get some fresh air, and but also to exercise your car. We have gotten an awful lot of calls from people that have had their cars sitting for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. They go to start it, the battery's dead. Critters have moved in. We've heard of that quite a bit lately. So you know, the more you can use your car, and again, try to plan it. You go to the supermarket, and one of the other things too. A lot of families have more than one car in the household. Take a different one every time you go out. You know, normally you might take your car, but maybe the next time you go out, you take the other car and you switch back and forth. So both of the cars can get a little bit of exercise. My wife braved the world today and went out to the supermarket at 6:30 in the morning, but she took my car rather than her car because my car really hasn't gone anywhere in the last week or so.
Good idea. Yeah, and John, what you said about, Jamie, I'll go to you. I just want to say, John, what you said about critters. I was on a walk yesterday and saw a squirrel climb up under somebody's car, and I thought, oh, gosh. Jamie, go ahead.
Well, just going to say, too, you know, I live now in the area near my mom, and we're making sure that, you know, her car gets driven as well, you know, while we're dropping off groceries and things like that. So if you're helping out neighbors who maybe can't get, you know, who are higher risk and can't get to the groceries for themselves, you know, offer to take their car, too, just to make sure that it gets driven and, you know, work any squirrels out from under the hood.
That's a great idea. Jamie, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you about people who are having trouble making their car payment right now because they've been furloughed or laid off. I know that there are options, but we do need to go to a break. We'll also get to some of your questions after this break. So this is Maine Calling. We're talking about the automotive world. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Encore Renewable Energy, committed to fueling Maine's economic recovery with solar energy for businesses and institutions. Encore.eco and Hospice of Southern Maine, caring for patients and families physically, emotionally, and spiritually. HospiceofSouthernMaine.org.
The coronavirus pandemic has taken medical attention away from other serious illnesses, including cancer. Non-essential surgeries have been halted, leaving many patients in pain and counting precious time.
It's not necessarily considered a medical emergency by them, even though it's like the entire world to me.
The impact of deferred treatments this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up later this afternoon at 4 here on Maine Public Radio.
I'm Noelle King, host of Morning Edition. There's a long list of things we need in order to bring you Morning Edition every day. Let's see, there's the Grande Light No Foam Latte for David Green. Oh, wait, that's the wrong list. Our real list includes reporters and editors around the globe, analysts and satellites and producers. How can you help with that list? You can donate your old car to this station. We'll turn it into the programs you love.
You can visit mainepublic.org and click on support.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the latest news from the world of cars, trucks, SUVs, EVs, minivans, and more. Joining me, Jamie Page Deaton, executive editor of the U.S. News Best Cars team, and John Paul, AAA Northeast senior manager for public affairs and traffic safety, and AAA's car doctor. We invite you to be part of the conversation. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. I wish you all could see the screen in front of me. Jonathan and Cindy, our producers, are still talking about the Hyundai Genesis. Apparently, it starts at $47,700, but goes up into the $70,000 range. I don't think either one is in the market for one, but John, you spurred a conversation here. Jamie, I want to turn to you. You know, this is a really difficult time for so many people. If you have been laid off or furloughed from your job, this is not a time when it's easy to make a car payment. What can one do?
The first thing that you should do is reach out to your lender. And I know that that might be, you know, the last person you want to talk to. But a lot of lenders now are offering loan forbearance programs where they're willing to let you skip a couple of payments until you get back on your feet. But even if they don't have a program like that, or even if you don't qualify, if you're able to work with your lender, it will only work in your favor. They know that they would rather get, you know, some payment out of you, even if they can't get your entire payment out. And then the other thing that a lot of people don't realize, if things get bad enough that your car is getting repossessed, you should make it easy for your loan company to repossess your car. If you do a lot of, if you play a lot of games, if you hide the car, if you move it around, the cost of finding your car gets added to the balance of your loan. So when you're doing that, you're only adding, money and, to the hole that you're in. So really reach out to your lender, see if they have a program, see if they can work with you. Maybe they'll be able to refinance your loan. Maybe they'll be able to reduce payments for a little while. But if the worst thing actually happens and you do need to give up your car, make it easy for them to find it. Don't play games with them. Just be honest, be above board, and that'll help you. That'll mean that you'll pay less in the long run.
All right. We'll go to David, who's calling from the Blue Hill Peninsula. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, I wanted to just say that there's no discussion about electric cars and the advantages that electric cars have in a situation like this, because they have probably half the moving parts. There's no internal combustion engine. And, if the car sits, which mine has quite a bit now because we're not doing much driving, it really doesn't make any difference. And so there's a real cost savings there.
Sure, David. Thanks for your call. And John, is that true? Can an electric car just sit?
Well, it can sit for a certain period of time. Some of the Teslas, I forget what they call it, vampire drain or something, when the car sits for a long period of time. So there's some specifics about how you should keep an electric car charged when it's sitting for a period of time. But you still need to worry about brakes getting rusty, which can happen when a car sits for a period of time. Brake calipers can stick, brake rotors can get most of the time just surface rust on them, but it can get a little bit worse than that depending where you live and the amount of salt content that gets on the roads and things like that. So that's one of the things you still need to think about. Oil you don't need to think about. And most electric cars still have a 12-volt battery to run the accessory side of it. And although there are few electric cars that actually can sort of jumpstart their own 12-volt battery, but that is something that also needs to be considered. Recently, I drove the newest version of the Nissan Leaf with the bigger battery pack in it, and I think it had a range of about 236 miles. And under normal circumstances, that would push about my ability to drive it and recharge it at a home, just in a regular 110-volt outlet. But I hate to use the term the new normal. That would be a perfect replacement for my car right now, because I'm just like many people, I'm not driving that much right now either.
David, thank you so much for your call. And we have a related tweet. This is from Marty. What is happening in the electric vehicle marketplace? Will we see continued growth, or will low gas prices and reduced commutes cause drivers to stick to conventional vehicles? Jamie, a whole lot of speculation about this in the automotive press.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about just the electrified vehicle market, you're going to see it continue to expand. Toyota released, you know, four new models yesterday. Now they're making, you know, their Sienna minivan is only going to be available as a hybrid. So if you're talking about cars with some electrification, that's going to continue to expand. But I was reading some analysis yesterday, and you're starting to see some contraction within the EV market, where there's still haven't really broken through to become kind of the commonplace models for everyday buyers. They still tend to be concentrated in luxury segments with people who are, you know, buying the electric cars, both because they believe in it, but also so that, you know, people know that they have an electric car. But what you are going to see is just more and more cars with electrified components coming to market. And that's what's really going to push the numbers higher. But for the time being, most analysts agree that we aren't going to see a huge uptick in EV buying. In fact, we might see a little bit of contraction there.
An email for Andrea. My car is a 1999 Camry that I'm driving less than usual. Would adding a quart of Lucas heavy-duty oil stabilizer to the regular oil be a good or dumb idea, John?
I hate to say things are dumb ideas, but I don't think it's at all necessary. More important is don't forget about you look at changing oil in time and distance. So for her Camry, it's probably changed the oil every 5,000 miles or every 6 months. Well, if it's been closing in on 6 months, you would be much better off changing the oil, even though the car may have only been driven 1,500 or 2,000 miles, to get fresh oil in there. Adding some additives to oil, in this case, I don't think is necessary. The one additive that I will say to add to something is a gasoline stabilizer, which gasoline over time can sort of get sour, and depending on where the gasoline comes from, it may have ethanol in it, and ethanol is an oxygenate that that helps keep the air clean. And between the two of those, the gasoline can get stale, and adding something like a fuel stabilizer will keep that gasoline from going bad. I was joking with someone the other day that, you know, the MPG that we call miles per gallon seems to be months per gallon right now, because people really aren't driving that much. And our own two family cars, I went, you know, about 6 weeks ago, I went to the local auto parts store and bought a bottle of fuel stabilizer, put it in each car. And although both cars, I think, have topped off the gas, you know, there's some gas in there that's been in there for, you know, 5 or 6, 7 weeks now.
An email from Cliff. I need to return a leased car at the end of the month. Two questions. One, do you think I can get a good deal to buy the car at the end of the lease? And two, if I don't keep the car, I will need to rent a car for the summer. Do you think it's safe to rent a car? Jamie, I'll throw Cliff's questions to you.
So, yes, I do think it's safe to rent a car. I would go over it with some disinfecting wipes, and, you know, maybe I'd go pick it up. Go over it with disinfecting wipes as best you can, take it home, let it sit for a day or two just to be totally safe, and then make sure that once you get home, you're washing your face and your hands and everything very carefully. But I do think it's safe. For the leased car, what you might be able to buy it for at the end of your lease really depends on your lease contract. This is kind of interesting because some lease contracts will say, if you want to buy it, here's the price. And that's what you settled on, you know, when you leased the car 2 or 3 years ago. Well, now that car's value might be very different. And so what's interesting is someone else could potentially buy it for a lot less than you could. And so you'd really just want to talk through it with the dealer, see what the lease contract says, and see what price you can get for it. Because, you know, if you like the car and, you know, you feel like you can get a decent deal with buying it, like, there's no reason not to. You know how well it's been taken care of. So compared to other, you know, used cars, you know, that's a good option.
Is there any chance, despite what his contract says, Jamie, that he's going to go back and say to the dealer, I'm thinking about returning it, thinking about buying it, is there any way you can help me with the price, and that they're going to say yes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, a sale's a sale, so they would still want to go. They might still want to work with them, so that would be the first step, is go to the dealer and ask about it.
All right. If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Friedrichs, who's calling from Milo. Hi, Friedrichs. Go ahead.
Hi. You almost answered my question. How much ethanol can you, dry gas, right? Can you add to a gas tank that is sitting there? I mean, I'm driving 10 miles a week, maybe. So the gas lasts a long time.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't add, you know, you're probably thinking about gasoline antifreeze, which may contain methanol, it may contain ethanol, it may contain who knows what it contains. I would add more of a gasoline stabilizer to that instead. So there's all kinds of brands. Stabil, S-T-A-B-I-L, is one that's been around forever and ever and ever. And I would just add a couple of ounces of that, read whatever it says in the directions. And that's the same stuff that you would put in a snowblower in the summertime and a lawnmower or lawn tractor in the wintertime. And that just keeps the gasoline in there from going bad. It also coats some of the interior, coats some of the components to keep any rust from building up. So the gasoline, again, depending on where you live, there's about 10% ethanol already in the gasoline as an oxygenate that helps keep the air cleaner. But that ethanol also tends to attract moisture. Different than we think about adding a product to the gasoline to take care of moisture, the ethanol in gasoline tends to attract it, so it goes into something called phase separation. Then all of a sudden you need to be a scientist to understand what all that means. But really just some gasoline stabilizer, and again, there's a bunch of different brands. I tend to use the one that is designed for marine use, only because it tends to be more fortified against ethanol contamination issues. So, but go with that and you'll be fine.
All right, Friedrich, thanks for your call. A tweet here from Roy. Maine is big Subaru country. My next one, I hope, will be electric. Any idea when that might be? Jamie?
You know what? I don't. I mean, I know that they've got they've had for years the Crosstrek Hybrid, which is a great electrified, you know, little compact SUV or subcompact SUV even, which I really like a lot. But I have not heard very much from Subaru on electric cars in their future. Although I will say, you know, the gas mileage from their, you know, internal combustion engines sometimes is just absolutely incredible. You know, getting up to 42 miles per gallon, I think, on the highway from the Impreza, which I don't know how they're doing it, but it's impressive.
Okay. We'll go back to David in Blue Hill. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi, I didn't get a chance to let folks know that Efficiency Maine offers a $2,000 cash rebate if you buy a new electric car, and Chevrolet is offering $8,500 in cash. So I bought a brand new Bolt with a 250-mile range for $25,000.
All right, well, thanks for that tip. I appreciate it. And John, this is what you were talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, you can look at some great deals on some cars, and I like the Chevy Bolt a lot. I wish I've gotten to drive it more than I did. But you look at some of these smaller electric cars like the Bolt, the Leaf. There are a few. Hyundai and Kia both have fully electric vehicles now, and they tend to be a good replacement when they have that sort of range, that 200 plus mile range. They can be a good replacement for a gasoline car. Now, if you commute 150 miles round trip back and forth to work, you'll get home. But depending on how the vehicle needs to recharge, unless you have a 240-volt charger outlet, it's going to take you several days for it to recharge, so it becomes a little impractical. But if you're somebody who drives 50 or 60 miles a day, you plug in at the end of the day, no different than, you know, I'm sitting here at my little makeshift desk, and I have a computer that's plugged in, a cell phone that's plugged in, and a tablet that's plugged in. So I'm kind of used to plugging things in at the end of the day.
David, thank you so much for calling back. We are going to go to a break. We're talking with AAA's car doctor, John Paul, and U.S. News and World Report's automotive editor, Jamie Page Deaton. What are your questions about buying cars right now, taking care of your car, maybe financing your car right now, or about the automotive industry? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine, inviting you to learn about Maine's Holocaust survivors at the Michael Clarr Center in Augusta. And Breakwater in Portland offering summer day camp programs for kids ages 3 to 18. Registration at enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
The Victoria Mansion in Portland is added to the U.S. National Register of Historic Places on May 19, 1970. This brownstone Italian villa is one of the finest surviving examples of high Victorian architecture in Portland. The structure was constructed from 1859 to 1863 as a summer home for Ruggles Sylvester Morse and his wife, Olive Ring Merrill Morse. A native of Maine, Morse made his fortune as the proprietor of luxury hotels in New Orleans during the 1850s.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine! Here's a little-known fact about Maine Public Television and our Create channel, the World Channel, and our PBS Kids 24/7 channel. They are all available over the air for free. All you need is a digital antenna and you're in business. And now is a very good time to see how clear and vibrant our television signals are in your area. We just upgraded our Southern Maine television tower and are sending out a stronger signal than ever before. A stronger signal and a greater reach, it's worth exploring. No cable connections or satellite dishes are required. Want to know more? Go to mainepublic.org and find out how you, too, can watch Maine Public Television over the air for free.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we're taking your automotive questions. What do you want to know about car care or car buying, especially during the COVID crisis? With me, Jamie Page Deaton with U.S. News and John Paul with AAA. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can get in a tweet at Maine Calling or a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. I have a question here from Jonathan. John Paul, what do you think of the EV Mustang and Ford's charging stations? Is this a game changer?
Well, my biggest problem with the Mustang is I don't know that there should ever be a four-door Mustang. That's, I love the idea of this electric Mustang, but the idea that it has four doors makes me cringe a little bit. Mustang should be two doors. It's just maybe it's a function of my age. I'm not sure. But the idea that Ford, like Tesla, is saying that we are going to develop our own charging network to make the experience that much more seamless. And that's one of the things you talk to people who will drive a Tesla with, you know, a 250, 280 mile range, and they'll drive it to Florida in the wintertime, but they'll find the charging stations along the way. They'll recharge the battery, you know, up to about 80% of its capacity in the time it takes to have a quick lunch break. And they're back on the road and driving another couple hundred miles until they find their next rest stop with a Tesla fast charging station. If Ford follows that same example, that is really going to be something that's going to turn the market around a little bit. But again, as good as that electric Mustang looks, four doors, I'm not so sure.
Jamie, what do you think about it? And why do you think Ford labeled its EV as a Mustang?
First, I think it's a gorgeous car. And I think, you know, not to give too much away, but I think John and I might just have a generational disagreement here. I don't care that it has four doors. I think it's beautiful. I think that putting the Mustang name on it is smart by Ford because it brings well-known branding to consumers where it says this is a car that is about performance. It's not like a lot of people, I think, have this idea that you have to compromise to get an EV, and that's not at all the case. And with this, you know, the Mustang Mach-E, it is really, great to drive. I have not driven it, but all of the reviews that I have read say that it's absolutely incredible, everything that you would want from both an EV and a Mustang. And then, you know, you've got this added bonus of, you know, a usable backseat and cargo area. So I think, you know, as far as EV goes, or EVs go, I mean, you know, it's wonderful because you can have a good time driving around with and still, you know, put your family in the back. And, I mean, honestly, it just looks really cool, like a Mustang should.
Did Jamie just call me an old man?
I said there might be a generational difference.
I think you called me an old man.
I didn't say who was older, John. That was all you.
Okay, I'm going to go to an email from Eric. I'm not driving my new Honda Ridgeline a lot. It was manufactured in October 2019, and I bought it in February. The first oil change should be at 12 months or when the oil life indicator gets to 15% or less. Do I measure the 12 months from the date of manufacture or the date of purchase? John, that's your kind of question.
Yeah, that's an old guy question. I accepted it. It was my birthday the other day. I'm fully on board now. So, I would go from date of manufacture because normally that might not be the case because the car might only sit on the lot for a couple of weeks. But I think in this case, go by when the engine was made. The worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to get fresh oil in your engine. There's plenty of time. Today's engine's different than years ago when engines had break-in oil and they needed to break in early, so you would change the oil and let the oil break in with that original oil. That's completely different. The engines are all good to go as soon as they get put in the car. So changing the oil a little bit earlier than you normally would. Look at the oil monitor. That's going to give you some indication. But the oil monitor, and what this is, it's a device that's built into the engine that looks at how long it's been since an oil change, and it measures things like how often the car gets started, how long it gets driven, the temperatures it gets driven in. But one thing it can't do is it can't actually measure the actual contamination level of the oil. It uses a fancy algorithm to come up with something that's close, and normally under most conditions it works really well, but you're not gonna hurt doing the oil change a little bit early.
Jamie, I'm going to send this one to you. This is a tweet from Mal. During the pandemic, aren't electric vehicle drivers safer? We plug in at home on our own chargers. We don't go to gas stations, which require customers to touch the pump handles, the pin pads, and the gas pumps. I claim EV drivers are safer and pay less for transportation.
Yeah, I mean, she's right. They're certainly going to be exposed to less risk because they aren't going to be touching, the fuel pump handles and things like that. Of course, people who are driving gasoline-powered cars, you can wear gloves. You can wash your hands before and after you touch or use hand sanitizer after you're done, filling up. So I would say, not a doctor, obviously. but I would say that the risk from gasoline pumps, as long as you take adequate precaution, are not huge, it doesn't seem like. But at the same time, EV drivers who are only using their own plugs, they're going to have a little bit less risk there.
Eric on Facebook, a different Eric writes, I bought my new Prius all-wheel drive E last September and only have about 1,700 miles on the odometer. Toyota wants me to take it to the dealer every 6 months, four times for courtesy inspections. I see no sense in this to drive my car 100 miles round trip and take up half my day to go to strangers in this time of pandemic when there's absolutely nothing wrong with my car. Now they're threatening to withdraw my warranty. I got a nasty card with all the expensive things that could go wrong with it and that I'd have to pay out of pocket if I don't comply. Can they actually get away with this? John?
You need to follow the maintenance requirement of the vehicle. You don't need to bring it to the dealer to follow the maintenance requirement of the vehicle. So as long as you look in the back of the owner's manual, that is the most least read book ever published, I guess, because people don't look at the owner's manual enough. But go in the back of the owner's manual and see what needs to be done at certain times. Now, it may have a certain six-month checkup that things need to be done, and whether you're a DIYer and you do it yourself, whether you bring it to the corner garage to have them do it, document it. There's no way that the warranty can be made invalid because you didn't go back to the dealer. It's just, it can't be done. So do something with the car, maintain the car, even though the car's only been 1,700 miles and the car's probably perfect. Still, it needs to have those checkups done, but your local gas station, tire store, garage, or you can do it yourself and just kind of, if you know what you're doing and you look under the car and say, no, I checked the axles and the CV joints and this and that, all the things that the owner's manual says to do. One little word of caution, sometimes what happens is the dealership has a different maintenance schedule than the owner's manual does. The owner's manual is the one. That's the schedule that's recommended by the vehicle manufacturer. The dealer may have a little bit extra service that they add in that to keep the warranty isn't necessary.
Mm. So, Jonathan, our producer, has moved from the Hyundai Genesis to another topic, which is Tesla. He wants to know, you guys, if you've seen the story of the Tesla with the steering wheel that came off, and if so, what do you think of Tesla's quality control, and have you driven the Tesla Y? I'll go to you, Jamie.
I have not driven it, the Tesla Model Y. I have significant concerns about Tesla's quality control. I mean, even if you go into, you know, forums that are for Tesla owners and Tesla fans and things, you know, you'll see people posting pictures where you have issues like panel gaps, seats that won't fold down. So, you know, I think there is some well-documented concern there. Now, all car companies, particularly when they're dealing with, you know, new models and things, have quality control issues. And so Tesla is not really special in that regard. But, you know, what it really comes down to is, if you're in the market for a Tesla, if you're comfortable with it. The one thing I will say that does bother me about Tesla, both as a journalist and somebody who uses the roads, is the improper use that we see from a lot of Tesla owners of the autopilot function. And I think it was irresponsible of Tesla to name that function autopilot because it is nowhere near an autopilot. But when you see, you know, Tesla drivers, and, you know, we've all seen stories and there's been crashes that are related to it, where, you know, the drivers are asleep or they're watching movies and things like that. I think it's a real failure, of communication on the part of Tesla to their owners on what exactly that system is capable of. I think, you know, Tesla has some manufacturing concerns and some quality control concerns, and those have been well documented. But I think kind of the bigger concern with Tesla is, you know, making sure that their owners are using their cars properly, because that is, I think, a bigger safety issue.
John, do you want to chime in on this one?
Yeah, I mean, my only experience is I know somebody who they bought actually two Model 3s, so the last new model that came out, and he was very proud of it, and he took me for a ride, and I went to get out of it, and I closed the door, and the passenger door didn't shut the first time. And I looked at it, and Jamie pointed out panel gap. Well, yeah, the door fit was just poor on the vehicle. Now, it was a pretty interesting car to drive, and Jamie's right, the idea of people putting the car in self-driving mode, there are way too many YouTube videos of people playing games and doing all kinds of things instead of driving, and all of these semi-autonomous features don't take the place of a fully engaged driver, and that's what we should be when we're behind the wheel, is a fully engaged driver.
Jamie, I want to ask you about a related topic, which is State Farm has announced that it is going to send a rebate to many of its customers who have automotive policies. Do you see this, because people aren't driving as much, do you see this as something that's going to happen throughout the auto insurance industry? Are lots of people going to be getting rebate checks? And also, if one goes shopping around for auto insurance right now, are you liable to get a deal?
Yes, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's not just State Farm. I mean, most auto insurers are returning money to their policyholders. And this is one of those things where it sounds like a really good feel-good story, like, hey, you know, we care about you, and we know you're not driving, here's your money back. But actually, these insurers, if they don't give the money back, are at risk for getting in trouble with the state insurance regulators. So this is not coming from, the goodness of their heart. It's because the company knows it is cheaper to give people a rebate than it is to, you know, pay a fine because they're violating state laws. I will say, though, it's still worthwhile to give your car insurance company a call and say, hey, I know you gave me this, you know, 20% rebate for 2 months, but guess what? Like, I want to see, here's my new mileage. And it's likely to be that way because maybe your office has announced, you know, you're not going back into the office until December or something like that. So you're not going to have a daily commute for the next 6 months. Call your auto insurance company, and even if they've offered you a rebate, see if you can get your rates lowered, because that rebate is probably only for 2 to 3 months worth of premiums. And you may even do better by talking to them and talking through what your needs are at this moment. And by all means, shop around for your auto insurance. This is particularly true, you know, if you're undergoing, you know, having hours cut or salary cut or a job loss. Do not let your auto insurance lapse. It can seem like it's one of those things that you can let go, but it absolutely is not, because what happens if, you know, you owe money on your car, you let your auto insurance, you know, lapse, and then a tree falls on it, then you're really going to be out of luck. So shop around, call around every couple of months, twice a year, anytime your policy is up for renewal,
and see what other auto insurers can do for you in terms of rates, because you might be pleasantly surprised, and you know, you might end up saving, you know, $20-$30 a month, but you know, over the course of a year, that really adds up.
John, just about a minute left. I want you to leave us with some good tips. You've already mentioned get out once a week and drive your car for 20 minutes. What else this time of year are you thinking about? I got my snow tires off a couple weeks ago. I figured May was about time. What else do I need to know?
Make sure you look at all those vital fluids. Look at the cooling system. Look at the antifreeze. We may have hot weather coming up in the summertime. So you want to make sure that the antifreeze is protecting the car against boil over as well. Your radiator has suffered a little bit of damage over the course of the wintertime. And look and see that the air conditioning is going to work well when you want it to on a hot day. You know, it's always tough at the repair garage after that third 90-degree day and everybody goes into the shop because their ACs aren't working. Check it when it's 70 degrees out and see if it's working. And if it isn't, go into a good repair shop and get it checked out. And tires, critical. You said you took your snow tires off. Tires can age out as well, besides completely wear out. So when a tire gets to start to be 6 or 7 years old, look at them carefully. Look for things like dry rot and cracking, things that could cause a blowout at high speed.
All right. Well, thank you so much, both of you. So nice to hear your voices, and be well. That is John Paul, AAA's Northeast Senior Manager for Public Affairs and Traffic Safety, also known as the AAA Car Doctor. Also here, Jamie Page Deaton, Executive Editor of the U.S. News Best Cars team. Lucy Suchek ran the board today, and the program will be rebroadcast at 7. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay tuned for the latest update from CDC Director Nirav Shah, joined today by Heather Johnson. That is coming up in just a few minutes here on Maine Public Radio. You can also watch the briefing on Maine Public Television or at the Maine Public website. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.